1 week into the new league year, and really not even a full week, and so much has changed already. Welcome, Bird Gang. On today's show, Paul Calvisi joins me, helps me get caught up on all that has happened thus far. No question, GM Monty Austin Ford has been very busy, including earlier on Monday. Let's not waste any time. It's Cardinals Cover 2, Episode 736, and it starts now.
Welcome to Cardinals Cover 2.
Buda Baker, what heart, what threat. This guy's unbelievable.
Cardinals Cover 2 is presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals, and by Arizona Cardinals Podcasts. Visit azcardinals.com/podcast.
He's at the 10, at the 5, he's in again! Some more Murray magic.
Wow!
Here's Craig Grealoux.
So you go away for a week, and well, you miss a lot. Seven players re-signed, seven players signed, one player acquired, plus a handful of goodbyes. But the biggest news I missed, Paul, you have breaking news, a brand new addition to the family.
Oh, no. Oh,
congratulations.
No, it's not congratulations, because in this election year, Craig Grealoux, I lost to Casa Calvisi. 3-1 was the final vote. I tried hard, used a lot of resources trying to lobby the 17-year-old punk. He let me down. He wouldn't come to my side. And so we have a brand new dog at the household. As someone who has held that off for a good decade plus, finally I succumbed. And so now we have a four-legged friend running around Casa Calvisi. And, yeah, Craig, appreciate it. Honestly, especially after that intro, we were hopeful, since you weren't here last week, that perhaps you had gone elsewhere. But, no, you have returned. So, here we go.
You're not that lucky, Paul. By the way,
yeah.
Does the four-legged animal have a name? What do we call him? Okay.
So, it was a rescue dog from the shelter.
Okay.
They named him. They named him Marty.
Marty, okay.
He's Chihuahua with a wiener dog mix. Okay, so... Remember the old Taco Bell commercials?
Yes.
Dead ringer for the Taco Bell dog. So Marty, then we went with Frankie for a while. Then I was watching The Highwaymen with Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson on the two Texas Rangers who caught Bonnie and Clyde on Netflix. And one of the characters was named Pancho, which means free in Spanish, if I'm not mistaken. I'm thinking, all right, maybe Pancho. So we went with Pancho for a hot 3 or 4 hours. Then it evolved into Cheeto, and then the wife wanted Pico. So we have our own March Madness bracket of names that we have to decide on right now, Craig.
Your poor dog is not going to know what name to call, to react to.
So right now,
to acknowledge,
it's just "Hey you" until we figure out
"Hey you"
and decide. That's all right. Dog doesn't listen already, so nothing is new.
Well, it fits right in with the rest of your family.
Right.
They don't listen to you, Paul, so it's...
That's right. I used to say, because my wife, let's just say, you know, I might be the voice of reason. So we have two kids. I like to say I have three children, okay? But now I have four, basically, is what's happened at my place.
Well, good for you.
Yeah.
A rescue dog, so congratulations. Good luck with that as well. So I missed that, but I'll say this, and I kind of say this somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but the biggest news that I missed last week might be the best news for the Arizona Cardinals, and dare I say, the entire NFC West.
Oh.
Aaron Donald retired.
That's right. Yes, and Kyler said it well. Please don't come back. And you know what? I was surprised. He left $30 million, at least, on the table. So, and considering just how devoted he is to the game in his workouts, we know that from James Conner, his workout warrior partner. They go all the way back to their college days at Pitt. So let's hope that James Conner comes into camp in as good a shape as he always is, because, you know, he doesn't have Aaron Donald to drive him in the offseason. But that's huge, absolutely huge. And what's hilarious is when you go back and you watch a lot of the film clips on NFL Network or on the social media platforms, how often he was triple teamed. Even at times quadruple teamed, right? He'd get the double team, he'd get the chip, he'd get, I mean, he was always the center of attention. So honestly, if he came to the conclusion that, man, I'm just sick and tired of going against, forget double teams, triple teams all the time, I wouldn't necessarily blame him.
10 years in the league, every single season ending with a Pro Bowl selection, 8 times an All-Pro, 3-time Defensive Player of the Year, and someone who wreaked havoc with a capital H on the Cardinals, 16 sacks, 26 tackles for loss, best production against any opponent. And you're right. I thought Kyler had the best response. Thank God. In all caps. And he's not kidding. And tremendous player. Can't say enough about Aaron Donald. Maybe the best defensive player in our generation, right there with maybe a Reggie Wyatt, a Lawrence Taylor, but certainly along that same level of production, and someone that, if you're the offense, you break the huddle, where is Aaron Donald lined up? Because we saw him across the line of scrimmage, whether that was on the left side, in the middle, or on the right side. But as we say here, good riddance. We say that with a smile and all due respect.
Well, look, for example, the super rookie for the Rams last year, Byron Young, had a really good season, especially as a day three draft pick. How much of that was just because he was on the same D-line with Aaron Donald? Really curious to see how productive he is this year in year number two, minus the best player of his generation. I always go back to the DJ Humphrey story on the Big Red Rage, the first time he went against Aaron Donald as a young guy, and he said they broke the huddle. He got, this dude's tiny, right? DJ Humphrey's all 6'5" of him, looking at 6'1", maybe 6'2" Aaron Donald. And then they snap the ball. And you find out that he's an absolute dynamo and Tasmanian devil there in the trenches. And you're right, they would move him around, especially towards the latter stages of his career. Paris Johnson Jr. said, you know what? Right from the get-go, he would come all the way out over him at right tackle just because he wanted to test the rookie. And so, Paris Johnson Jr., part of his rookie season, he got to go against the best of the best and the Hall of Famer first ballot guy, the legend Aaron Donald among them.
It's a good lead-in here on Cardinals Cover 2, presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals, to discuss what the Cardinals did do on their D-line last week and even going back before that with the re-signing of LJ Collier. Now, none of the players that the Cardinals re-signed or added in free agency is in Aaron Donald. But it does show you and tell us that, yes, the line of scrimmage, especially on the D-line, something the Cardinals prioritized in free agency. You added three players, Justin Jones, Bilal Nichols, and Kyrus Tonga late in the week, and three for maybe more coming on the way, whether in free agency or the draft. But no question that the eight free agent moves, including one earlier on Monday with the signing of wide receiver Chris Moore to a one-year contract, five of the eight moves devoted to the defense on all three levels, but none with more attention than that D-line.
And we talked about it all offseason. Okay, there are wants and needs. D-line and corner are serious, dire needs, just in terms of numbers, in terms of performance, what you had last year, how injured you were in both position rooms. So not a surprise that Monty Osivor comes out and he goes Costanza. He does the opposite, right? Remember that Seinfeld episode where George decides to do the opposite? So he goes, all right, what I have in my room last year? A lot of guys who piled up a lot of injuries and a lot of missed games. So now I'm going to go for reliability, durability, availability. And it's sort of like, you ever own that car that's constantly broken down and it ends up being a lemon, right? Are you going to buy that brand again? No. So there's Monty Osford. He goes out into the open market, and he gets a couple of guys. You figure you're going to pencil in his starters, at least as of right now, with a long track record of longevity and reliability.
Justin Jones started every game the past two seasons. Bilal Nichols started every game the past two seasons, has played in every game the past four seasons, and Kyrus Tonga played in 14 games last season. Something that this team desperately need is availability, and you look at every player in free agency that has been added, everyone to a man played at least 14 games last season. As they say, Paul, your best ability is availability, and that was an issue on a number of fronts for the Cardinals a year ago, but again, no more so than on defensive line. And then, talking about Jones and Nichols specifically, listening to them last week, the attitude that they want to play with and the attitude that they hope to bring with the Arizona Cardinals. Justin Jones asked about playing defensive tackle. Quote, you got to be a mean SOB. Bilal Nichols about the attitude that he wants to bring into the room. Quote, we the baddest mofos walking. End quote. That's language. Those are words, Paul, that I applaud. haven't really heard a lot of from the defensive line in recent memory, but bringing in new names, new voices for hopefully a new defensive line.
Attention, Jim Omohundro and Cody Fincher, the out-of-context clips. You might want to take Craig Grealoux uttering that last sentence, which I will not say, so you're not be able to pin it on me. Yeah, Bilal Nichols, Justin Jones. So, okay, let's see here. They're tough guys. They can play up and down the defensive front. That versatility Jonathan Gannon and Nick Rawls talk about that they covet so much. They also bring a mindset of physicality. Interesting to hear some of the free agents come in and say, watching the Cardinals from afar, they saw a physical team. DJ Dallas saw that. Mac Wilson talked about that. And so, okay, in year one, if you were paying attention around the league and you saw what the Cardinals put out on the field, they put a very physical team out there with an attitude that never gave up. They always fought you. Now, did they have the horses, especially along the defensive line? Absolutely not. They ended up worse than the league in stopping the run, near the bottom of the league in pressure rate, so they got to get better. And to get better, you got to get better players. And that's what they're in the process of doing. But to me, if you were able to win some of those games down the stretch like the Cardinals did a year ago, and you're giving them better dudes in the trenches along that D-line, then okay. Because I truly wonder, to what degree did we see Jonathan Gannon's preferred defense? Did we really see what Nick Rawls wanted to run or what he had to run? Because they were so depleted along the defensive front. So if you're giving them the guys that they need and they want to be able to run what they want, I'm curious what that means next season. I know Jonathan Gannon made the comment about, you know, restructuring the offense and tearing it down, and that was half tongue-in-cheek, and I do believe he was messing with the media to a certain degree. I'm curious, almost as curious, what the defense is going to look like. If you can fill some of those gaping holes on the roster and the depth chart, what exactly are they going to run?
Are you saying perhaps from a 3-4 to a 4-3? Are you talking that extreme because now you've built up the defensive line interior, maybe you add someone on a defensive end, to now you can play four at the line of scrimmage and have two edge rushers plus your Mike linebacker, i.e. Kaiser White. Maybe Mac Wilson's plays a little bit more on the edge, or are you just talking about the schemes and how you want to employ your 11 defensive players because now you have, or you believe you have, the talent to maybe do a little bit more differently than a year ago because of the talent on the field?
Yeah, definitely a wider array of defensive looks. There's no doubt about it. Are they going to change the base defense? No, I don't expect that. But there were plenty of times where they would have four D linemen in there and run down situations. There were plenty of times where on third and obvious passing situations, there wasn't a single guy or maybe just one guy in a three-point stance. And a bunch of Cardinals defenders in that front seven just walking around, making it look like chaos, even though they all had their assignments and they knew where they had to be approximately. They would make it look to the quarterback like it was just utter chaos. And you heard a couple of quarterbacks down the stretch cite that. In watching the film, Matthew Stafford was one of them, how unique the Cardinals' defense was to him on film versus any other opponent that the Rams had faced all of last season. I'm just saying what sort of possibilities this might present when you don't have a defensive line that in December and January, let's be honest, looked like a lineup you would field in August. I mean, a lot of guys really that would fill out a roster in preseason games had to play in December and January just based on injuries.
I'm going to go back to something that we've referenced a number of times here on Cardinals Cover 2, presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. And that is when Jonathan Gannon was in this very studio talking with Dave Pasch on the Dave Pasch podcast. I looked it up, June 5th, and that, quote, adapt or die, quote, the best coaches are adaptable. Certain offenses that you go against, if you only have four down, there are some hard downs that are going to go on. If you only play three down, there are some hard downs that are going to go, end quote. To your point, Paul, maybe we do see a 3-4, a 4-3. Maybe there is not a basic defense, but it depends on that week's opponent. What do they do? You now have a defensive line that you can rotate a little bit more than just three or four. Maybe you go five or six deep, keep everyone healthy and fresh, and show different looks to an offense, which makes the next week's opponent harder for them to scout what you do because all of a sudden you're changing week to week and maybe even quarter to quarter.
All right, so let's get crazy here. Let's really step out of bounds for a moment and think outside the box. If you're going to go 4-3, let's see. Kaiser White, Mack Wilson, and Zaven Collins gets pushed back off the ball linebacker. You go with four defensive linemen across the front. Who exactly is coming in the draft? Who else might be coming in free agency? I think it's a possibility. We talked to KVB last week on the highly rated Red Sea report that there are a couple of things that are atop the need or the to-do list for Gannon and Nick Rawlins. Number one, stop Kyron Williams. He ran all over you in two games, averaged about 7 yards a carry over the course of two losses to the Rams in your division. Stop Christian McCaffrey in the Niners' run game, something the Cardinals did not do last year. You got to start within your own division. And then, of course, we know what Seattle's thinking about doing because guess who their new head coach is, and he says he's going to bring a lot of the same mentality and philosophy from Baltimore, Mike McDonald, and he's equipped and geared up to be able to run the ball in a powerful way with Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet. That's why they let DJ Dallas go. They got their two workhorse running backs. So you better stop the run in the NFC West. You're going to see it till you stop it. That's what happened a year ago. Cardinals went 0-6 for the first time since the division was realigned. So to your point, yeah, anything and everything is on the table when you try and remedy some of what went wrong and address and assess last season.
Dead last against the run. Almost 4.7 yards per play. That ranked 29th in the league. And yeah, the inability to stop the run against the Rams, the 49ers, and to a little bit lesser extent, the Seahawks. But again, all three of those teams had great weeks running the football against the Cardinals. And you look at just the first wave of free agency. What were the first moves? Yeah, it was a cornerback in Sean Murphy Bunting, but you focus on the defensive line. You look at guys who not only can stop the run, have that mentality, but also just looking at some of the details of a Justin Jones and a Bilal Nichols and even a Mack Wilson. These are guys that also can rush the quarterback and get your sack total up. Nichols, or I should say Jones, had 4.5 a year ago. That would have been good for second best on the team. Wilson had 3.5 as an inside linebacker, barely playing defense. 3.5 is the same number as Zaven Collins had last year. And to this date, as we speak here on this Monday, Cardinals have not addressed edge rusher at all to this point.
Okay. So, man, that's a segue. For coming off a week off, and going and really keeping the Pac-12 alive, Craig, on your college tour, okay, with your daughter and hitting the great Northwest and all the college campuses up there. It's a great segue because it leads me into what some might term a hot take. I do not think the following is a hot take. I do not think the Cardinals are going receiver at number 4. I think a team will come up and will pay their price for the 4th pick overall. Let there be a 4th QB. I believe that is J.J. McCarthy. I believe next year's draft class stinks in terms of quarterbacks. There are enough desperate and hungry teams to come up this year. It's going to happen. The question is, how far down will the Cardinals trade? Again, this is my opinion. Do you go to 6 or the Giants, that sleeper team, to come up? If you do go down to 6, then maybe you still get one of the top receivers. If you go down a little farther, I think you're getting Dallas Turner. You're getting Jared Verse. You're ending up with the top corner on the board, maybe the second corner on the board. There are two that have really separated themselves from everyone, Terrion Arnold and Quinion Mitchell. I think if everything goes the way the Cardinals want, they trade out at number 4, they get more picks. This is an absolutely loaded draft. They already have 11. I get it, 6 in the first 3 rounds, and I also understand the old Wall Street mantra, pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered. I still want more picks. And guess what? You do get that edge guy. That is conspicuous by its absence here in free agency. Oh, maybe because they are incredibly overpaid and getting stupid money, even by NFL standards. Where else are you going to get that edge guy? You got to develop him, which means you have to draft him.
Cardinals did, according to the players themselves, meet with at the combine Jonah Ellis out of Utah, Chop Robinson out of Penn State, Braylon Trice out of Washington. Not a Jared Verse as far as your top tier, but someone that the Cardinals are still looking at. It's certainly a position that the Cardinals need. And then you get the news that happened late last week. Oh, the Minnesota Vikings acquired another first-round pick. They just lost Kirk Cousins. Are they now in the market for a quarterback? It's a team, Paul, that we haven't really talked a lot about. The Giants at number six, the Broncos. And then all of a sudden, this Vikings team, if they want to move up from number 11, yeah, they were always maybe on the radar, but what is it going to take to get to number four, or dare I say number three, if you leap in front of the Cardinals, because you don't want to wait until number four because you don't want to know what the Patriots happen to do.
Okay, so where there's smoke, there's fire. What if I told you that the Minnesota trade with Houston, which nets them 11-23 now in round one, those two picks taken together, based on the Jimmy Johnson trade value chart, those two add up to somewhere between the third and fourth pick in the NFL draft. Interesting. Let's see, there's a report to start this week that, guess what? The decision makers for the Vikings, the head coach, the GM, are traveling to Ann Arbor for a special private workout with J.J. McCarthy. The GM of Minnesota told the media that he has a, quote, preferred scenario in mind for the draft after last week's trade to acquire the second first-round pick. But here's where this is where it could, in my opinion, get even better for the Arizona Cardinals, because not only does Minnesota need a quarterback, not only does Denver desperately need a quarterback, the Raiders, the Giants, you could argue the Jets. How can you bank your future on Aaron Rodgers for any more than this coming season? I don't even know if you can count on Aaron Rodgers this coming season physically or mentally at this point. So if you have all those teams and they're all vying for that fourth pick, that fourth quarterback, then guess what? Not only is the QB kicker the surcharge in play, but if Monty can leverage all these teams against each other and drive that price through the stratosphere, that's where the Cardinals trade out.
What is it going to take? That phone will ring. And what will it take, though, for Monty to say, okay, we're going to pass on a generational talent at wide receiver? Because I think that's what it would be at this moment. It would not be a tackle, certainly not after the signing of Jonah Williams. Could see offensive line maybe later in the first round, early second round, especially on the interior, whether that's a guard or a center. But at number four, is there enough draft capital for Monty to sit there and go, well, that's just too good. I cannot. It's that Godfather. I'm going to make an offer. He can't refuse. And is there an offer out there that, yeah, we will all have questions. Monty's going to have to answer those questions and say, yes, we passed on Marvin Harrison Jr. We passed on Malik Nabers. We passed on Roma Dunze. But, folks, this is what we got. We got our solution at edge rusher. We got a number one or two cornerback. We filled a need on the offensive line. And dare I say, we keep hearing how deep this wide receiver draft class is. You still get a wide receiver. You're still going to draft a wide receiver at some point in this draft, even if it's not at number four.
Do we truly have a handle on the identity of this football team that Monty Ossenford is building? Because look at Jim Harbaugh, who has a long track record in the NFL, especially obviously with the 49ers. What's the first thing he did when he walked in with the Chargers? Said, you know what, Mike Williams, salary cap casualty. You know what, Keenan Allen, we can do without you, even though he just turned in a career year. They're without a top receiver right now, the LA Chargers, and they don't seem too concerned about it. So I throw that out there combined with the following question. If Marvin Harrison Jr. is truly this generational talent, this consensus best wide receiver to come out of the draft in X number of years, then why isn't he even the first receiver off the board in many of the mock drafts? Why is there even a debate? Daniel Jeremiah tweeting out to start this week, I wouldn't be shocked if Malik Nabers ended up being the first wide receiver off the board. I love Marvin Harrison Jr. and Adunze. Daniel Jeremiah continues, but Nabers brings a different element. It'll come down to preference of style, but I guarantee some teams will have Nabers at the top of the list. Chris Sims, who can be a bit of a hot take factory, okay? His ranking of the top receivers, Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas Jr. 2, Marvin Harrison Jr. 3, Roma Dunze 4. I'm not here to tell you which one is going to be the number one receiver in this draft. I'm just saying if Marvin Harrison Jr. is such a slam dunk, why isn't he number one in the eyes of a lot of these experts? So I tend to think that it's a lot of groupthink out there that the Cardinals should go Marvin Harrison Jr. at four. Not that that's a bad selection. If they determine and all the research and their evaluation says he's the guy, great. But if someone is offering you the moon and the stars to move out of number four, and, for example, a Brian Thomas, who seems to be this week's wide receiver rising, you know, the guy who's flying up the draft boards without playing a game, and there he is at 6'3", 209, all the testing's through the roof, and he ran a 4.33, and he had more touchdown catches for LSU than Malik Nabers. He had 17 to lead the SEC. All of a sudden, you get a guy like that who falls. Just throwing that out there, and I'm wondering what the ultimate thinking of Monty Austin Ford is.
Well, just remember the Cardinals' current number one wide receiver right now, Michael Wilson, was a third-round pick. So you can find wide receivers. I know you've got that list at the ready when you talk about Puka Nacua, Amon Ross, I'll get it eventually.
Yep.
But you can find those receivers, and then if you believe in your quarterback can elevate those receivers, then maybe it's not such a hot take. Now, it would be disappointing for a lot of the Bird Gang if that is indeed what happens with pick number four, but there are a number of wide receivers, all with size, all with good speed. Can you catch the ball? Can you catch the ball in traffic? And none of this is going to be known for at least 3 or 4 years down the road. But if you believe in what Monty did a year ago, you believe what he sees in his scouting department, then you have to trust in the decision maker and you go, okay, it might not be the popular decision, the popular choice. You might even disagree with it, but he's the man in charge. And it's his decision ultimately and what he will be ultimately judged upon, the success of that decision.
Here's something else I'll throw out when it comes to the receiver position. Why was Michael Wilson the starter as a third-round rookie last season right out of the gates in Washington? Because he's able to block in the run game. With Jonathan Gannon, believe it, no block, no rock. That's the way it works. Guess what? Rondale Moore is no longer part of this team. Hollywood Brown, no longer part of this team. Now, Jonathan Gannon, I think, was sincere and genuine in saying that he really appreciates the skill set of a Hollywood Brown and how he keeps defensive coordinators honest, if not up at night, getting ready for that Sunday game. But those two guys obviously didn't bring a lot in terms of blocking for the run game. And this is a team that ran for over 200 yards in three of the last four games, ended up top five in virtually every rushing metric. I just think, once again, the identity on the offensive side of the ball, we're now talking, is more run than you might imagine. Yes, you have a dynamic passer in Kyler Murray, but I think they're looking for those bigger receivers who are willing to lower the shoulder pads, get dirty and nasty in the run game, and then earn those targets in the pass game.
Let's go back to what happened in that first wave of free agency and the number of players that were added, and we go back to the availability on game day. Not missing games or only missing a couple of games. There is a type of person that Monty and JG want in this building and a type of player as well. And when it comes to the wide receiver position, there is a clear direction based off the move of trading Rondale Moore to the Falcons, based off of Hollywood Brown not being brought back here to the Arizona Cardinals. And that is a bigger wide receiver. With the addition of Chris Moore on Monday, the wide receiver room is now nine deep, and that includes Greg Dortch, who has yet to sign his tender, but he's not going anywhere.
Fine diminutive American.
Only Dortch and Andre Bocellia, speaking of fine diminutive Americans, those are the only wide receivers in that room.
Oh.
Two of nine that are under 6 foot tall.
Really? Really?
Everyone else is at least 6 foot or taller.
Okay.
And one, again, taller wide receiver, harder to cover, easier for the quarterback to see regardless of who your quarterback is. And then what you don't know, especially for some of these incoming wide receivers, how well do they block in the run game? What's their interest in blocking in the run game? And flashback to 2004, Larry Fitzgerald didn't really want to block in the run game. When he did, though, and when he learned that if I do block, then all of a sudden, to your point, here comes the rock. Okay, and he was very good at it, but took him a while to get to that point. Didn't take that long for Michael Wilson to realize that you have to be able to block in this offense in order to get the ball thrown your way.
No doubt. Hey, Fitz wasn't even all that interested in yards after catch when he first showed up his first couple of years. It took Todd Haley and Ken Wisenhunt to yell at him to be more than a one-trick pony, and then the rest is history. So you're right. You're seeing now the direction of this team, the identity, the personality of this team, and it's going to very much be a physical, straight-ahead type of attitude on both sides of the ball. So does that mean there isn't room for some skilled, athletic playmakers? Absolutely not. You know, they're still going to try and get Dortch into space and some of these other guys. I get it. But when in doubt, go with a bigger guy who you can use in the run game. And for that reason, I think, you know, believe your eyes and exactly who's signing the line that is dotted as pointing you in the direction of what this team is going to be all about. They adapted to what they had last year. Once again, I'm just curious what they look like when they have those players they have added by design instead of just adopted, you know, as a result of what they inherited. Because, Craig, a while back, you threw out the last four draft classes before the arrival of Monty Ossenfort, meaning the last four draft classes of Steve Keim. And I'll let you update this because it is stark. And out of, what, 32 players over the draft classes from 19, 20, 21, and 22, how many are now left on the Cardinals roster?
The number is six.
Wow.
And three of those from 2022. Trey McBride, Cameron Thomas, and Jesse Luketa. Zaven Collins, Victor Dimukeji remain from a seven-player class in 2021. There are no players left from 2020 with Leki Fotu signing with the Jets. And one player in what was an 11-player draft class in 2019, and that one player is Kyler Murray. So again, from 2019 to 2022, six draft picks remain on this team out of a possible 32. And again, some of that is you're not going to hit on every draft pick, but to your point, Paul, it's a brand-new front office, a brand-new coaching staff coming in, figuring out what they have, figuring out what they need, and figuring out what they have to move on with or move from to be able to play that offense and defense that they want to under JG and Drew Petsing.
So in sum of those four draft classes, 19, 20, 21, and 22, there are two foundational building block type players, two pillars, Trey McBride and Kyler Murray. So think of the degree of difficulty. Think of the entirety of the job, the enormity of the task of Monty Ossenfort. When we say he's been hitting the big red reset button, that's no joke. I mean, he's literally flipped this roster over and he started from scratch in so many different ways. That's why, by design, they have 11 picks in this draft. That's why I think they're trying to accumulate more. This is a loaded draft in a number of key positions the Cardinals covet. D-line, O-line, receiver, corner. So I just think by the time we get done with this draft, just over a month from now, that we're going to sit back and unlike the culmination of these four draft classes, you're going to look at this draft class combined with last year and you're going to realize that is absolutely the ground floor, the foundation for many years to come of where this team is going.
11 picks tied for the most in a single draft since the draft went to seven rounds in 1994. And to your point, Paul, maybe that number increases depending on what happens between now and the end of April or even when the Cardinals are on the clock at number four. And that's probably when, if anything does happen with that fourth overall pick, it's going to happen when the Cardinals are on the clock. I would not foresee something happen ahead of time. Just because I think if you're the Cardinals, you want to know what happens in front of you at 1, 2, and 3. And then can you get that bidding war going? Maybe you reach out, get some feelers ahead of time. But those 10 minutes they're going to go by quick, and you're going to have to make a decision in short order. And again, that wide receiver, that true projected number one wide receiver, no one is certain about any of these players, but we all hear that, oh yeah, can't miss. Well, there are a number of can't miss prospects that certainly missed in this draft, and it's an inexact science. You don't know what you have until they're in the building, and even still, you'll need a couple of seasons. But we are a little more than a month away from then, and still a lot can happen between now and then.
And just look at the age on this roster as they continue to rebuild it. Even their backup quarterback now, Desmond Ridder, who they got in return from Atlanta for Rondale Moore straight up, doesn't even turn 25 until August. Still has 2 years left on his rookie contract, a third-round rookie contract. He's on the books for just over $1 million this season and in 2025. So, you know, a lot of people wonder, oh, wait a minute, Cardinals could have got Justin Fields for that sixth-round pick. Conditional can go all the way up to a fourth. But hang on, Justin Fields, they have to make a decision as the former 11th pick overall as to whether they pick up his fifth-year option or not in May. And if they do, that's $25 million right there for, at best, a backup quarterback on this roster. So I understand going after Desmond Ridder. I thought it was a really interesting acquisition. Yes, he had his struggles, no doubt, for Atlanta the last 2 years. But you also saw some pretty good football from him in the two games you played against Desmond Ridder in 22 and 23.
That was the trade was the biggest surprise of the week for me, watching and paying attention from afar, because backup quarterback was one of those positions that no one really wanted to talk about, but I thought was something that needed to be addressed with a veteran. Now, Desmond Ridder is not an experienced veteran as far as years in the league. Paul, he's got 17 starts under his belt, 8 wins, including one against the Cardinals a couple of seasons ago. And I looked it up. He's actually played in as many games as Kyler the past 2 seasons.
Wow.
19.
Because
now,
of injury. Yeah.
Kyler started all 19, yeah. And Ritter's only started 17 of the 19. But you needed someone behind Kyler. Again, hopefully you never see Desmond Ridder on the football field outside of the preseason.
Exactly.
But you need to have a backup plan, and I think teams are starting to realize that after back-to-back seasons in which there were 65, 66 different starting quarterbacks in a single season. No one wants to see their starting quarterback go down, but if it's going to be for 3 or 4 weeks, do you have someone, like back in the day, a Colt McCoy, that can win 2 out of 4 games or 3 out of 5 to keep you afloat if you do have those playoff aspirations and keep you in the title chase? I don't know if that's Desmond Ridder, but I didn't feel comfortable enough with just a Clayton Tune backing up Kyler. Now, if Tune can beat out Desmond Ridder, all great for him, and you see what you have. But again, you hope to never see QB2 on the football field.
But see, your hesitation right there with Clayton Tune is exactly my point in bringing in Desmond Ridder. What is the most important aspect of any backup quarterback? Belief and trust from the locker room. That minus our franchise QB, we can go in and win this game. Guys believed in Colt McCoy. He won his share of games filling in for Kyler Murray. Clayton Tune, the one game on his resume at Cleveland, didn't go well. Maybe he evolves and develops into a fine NFL quarterback at some point, but that point is not now, not this season. So if indeed, knock on wood, everybody, you're without Kyler Murray because he loses a shoe, as the coaches like to say, gets injured, then you need someone who's been there and done that. 17 career starts in 2 years. He's a known leader, 4-year starter at Cincinnati. He's a guy who will command respect in the locker room, Desmond Ridder. And he has a similar skill set in a lot of ways to Kyler Murray. At least you don't have to completely re-engineer the identity of the offense, which you had to do to a certain degree between Kyler Murray and 36-year-old Colt McCoy. So, but he has escapability. I mean, his rushing stats, Wolf was reading his rushing stats from Cincinnati. I was floored. I didn't realize how much he had run the ball. I knew he had a 91-yard touchdown run in college at one point in Cincinnati, but he took Cincinnati to the college football playoffs. So, okay, once again, as a backup, there you go. It checks that box because I agree with you. It was a low-key need throughout the offseason. Who is Kyler's backup?
And this other nugget out of that quarterback room, for the first time in his career, Kyler Murray is the oldest QB in the room. He'll be 27 wow. When the season begins. He was in the same room once upon a time of a Brett Hundley, I'll say the name because I know I'll get a reaction out of you. Chris Streveler.
Oh, mandatory Streveler.
Was older than Kyler Murray. Colt McCoy in that room for two seasons, and Josh Dobbs as well. But now Kyler is the veteran in that room with someone who is not that much younger than him, but with experience in Ritter as far as a backup quarterback. But it's clear that no one wants to see your backup quarterback. But you do need to have a plan in place in the event something happens. And I don't think enough teams really think about that as far as spending money or draft capital or with the Cardinals, a player for player swap. And you hope that this is a move that works out for both players, a change of scenery to giving them new life in their young careers, talking about Ritter and Rondale Moore.
Can I just throw out there, too, what's interesting, when the free agents met the media, how many of them cited running into Kyler Murray in the building? First off, he's here every day, just like he was almost the virtual entirety of last offseason. Yes, he was rehabbing last offseason, but he could have done that a lot of that back home in Texas. This is his home. He is in there almost every single day. Almost every guy signed said he ran into Kyler Murray. They met with the GM. They met with the head coach. They met with the financial folks, signed on the line that is dotted. Then at some point, they ran into Kyler Murray. Sean Murphy Bunting telling us that he ran into Kyler and chopped it up with him. Sort of like Paris Johnson Jr. a year ago. Remember the story? Oh, I don't want to be a fanboy over here. But they're all really impressed to meet Kyler. As Sean Murphy Bunting told us, he's been playing Kyler on Madden for many years. Always drafts him. Jonah Williams telling stories about how he remembers Kyler Murray in high school at Allen in Texas, doing all those crazy feats that he did. He really was nationally known as a high schooler. That's how crazy impressive he was. And then it was interesting to see the news over the weekend, according to reports, that by carrying Kyler on the roster through this past weekend, the Cardinals locked in not only his 2024 season, which had been locked in at 35.3 guaranteed, but now 29.9 for 2025. Nearly $30 million locked in on his contract for 2025. So if finally we can exhaust any speculation, all right, Kyler's the Cardinals quarterback, period, going forward. Albert Breer, in his Monday morning quarterback column, as one of his bullet points, said, I checked in with my sources with the Cardinals, and I wanted to know, how did Kyler win over his new bosses? And Albert Breer said, I collected some anecdotes. And most of these we've already talked about at length. Number one, according to Breer, he rehabbed in Arizona, including late June and July when most guys bail. Kyler was there. Number two, he learned the offense during rehab, even though he couldn't get out on the field. He really did get involved in the meeting rooms. We'd heard a lot as well. Number three, Albert Breer said, when he first got back out there, Kyler, he did establish, you know what? He's coachable. And he's relatable to his teammates, maybe more than had been advertised or surmised when the new decision makers came in. If they were wondering, they found out. He's coachable. He can relate to his teammates. And then the Philadelphia win, which we've talked about, that second half. What he did in the second half of that game, that JG and Drew Petsing saw Kyler Murray as a quarterback who was running the offense the way they saw the offense designed. And that when he did make a mistake, well, the pick six, that he came to the sideline and said, you know what, I bleeped up. And he took fault for it, even though later we realized it was Michael Wilson. So that was a good sign. And then finally, the last little tidbit that Albert Breer cited in his research was that fourth down blitz, zero blitz in Philadelphia, where he hit Michael Wilson on the slant to tie it up at 28 all. And just his ability to wait, here comes a blitz, and then boom, make the right decision and an accurate throw right there in the red zone. So all that combined, and we've talked about all that, but now the rest of the country is getting clued in as to exactly what happened with Kyler and the Cardinals last season.
Kyler had to be here last offseason rehabbing. He doesn't have to be here this offseason, but I do think it's by design that we're hearing incoming players say they ran into Kyler Murray. They met Kyler Murray. They saw Kyler Murray. He's in this building. He's working. But I also think he's a welcoming committee. Maybe of one, but he is in here to make sure that players coming into the building and the facility for the first time see him as the franchise quarterback. He is the leader of the team, and it's important that Kyler be here when new players are coming in for the first time.
And to what degree is, you know, are they letting him in on a lot of these personnel decisions? So he feels a sense of ownership, that buy-in from him. You know, Paris Johnson Jr., he made his wishes known going into the draft last year. Jonathan Gannon has told the media multiple times, yeah, I talked to Kyler about virtually anything and everything. So as a franchise quarterback, guess what? You are usually let in on some of the grand plans. So, okay, perhaps he appreciates that and feels a sense of ownership now more than he ever did, because this isn't some roster that he just inherited and showed up. To your point, he's not one of the getting to the point where he's one of the super vets on this team, and it's his team in so many different ways.
That brings me to this last point. The one thing, not surprised, that happened a week that I was gone. Disappointed because you hate it for the person rather than the player. But you talk about leaders now in that locker room. DJ Humphreys, no longer an Arizona Cardinal, longest Cardinal, tenured Cardinal player, released. Certainly understand why, even though you hate it. But that's something that's going to be missed, not only on the field, but off the field as well. DJ Humphreys, always available to the media, always with a smile. Did once see Humphreys upset during training camp. A drill didn't go the correct way or something happened. And I saw a different side of DJ that I know, Paul, you've seen a lot on the sideline. But that was my first up-close view about it. But I wish nothing but the best. Hopefully if it's a full year away, he's able to come back in 2025. Perhaps it's with the Cardinals or some other team. But I don't think we've seen the last of DJ Humphreys on a football field in the NFL. Yeah,
I would agree. For his outgoing personality, fun-loving nature of his existence, he's a baller. He's a dog on game day. I think he'll miss the game. I think he will rehab. He's been there and done that before. From all accounts, he's ahead of schedule. Just depends where he ends up. And don't think for a minute that a franchise left tackle won't be in demand. There will be a home, a place for him somewhere in the NFL. Now, I'm curious, the drill you were talking about during training camp, was it the fourth down red zone drill?
It was the red zone.
Red zone. Actually, I think they put the ball on the four and they gave the offense four downs to get it in. And the Cardinals failed and the first team O-line came to the sideline. This was two training camps ago. And it was Kelvin Beachum and DJ Humphreys. Yeah. Very vocal, very upset. Both might have used their helmets as projectiles.
Yeah, some equipment may have been thrown up against some things. And I actually went into the locker room afterwards. And Humphreys at that point, you know, turned it around, all smiles, whatever. And I went up and was like, I have never seen you like that before. It was scary because you're that close. But that's the competitive nature of these players, regardless if it's training camp or a game day. They wanted to win. Something didn't work out. Can't really remember what it was. It might have been the fact that they weren't running the ball as opposed to passing the ball, but that's just the nature of that position because the offensive line takes things so personal when the offense does bog down inside the red zone.
He was a different dude on game day, though. There's no doubt about it. You know, we did his show, The Big Red Rage. His name was on it. He was there. He was always in a good mood. By Thursday night, didn't matter what had happened the previous Sunday, he was engaging. He was personable. He was funny. And we'd sit right next to him for an hour. We'd do the show, and then I'd see him 72 hours later on game day on the sideline. He'd look right through me. He was as close to me to you right now. He'd look right through me. No one from the media existed at that point. He was there to ball. And I'll tell this story one last time. Week two, the 22 season, it was the Cardinals at the Raiders. That was the epic game where Kyler extended the 20-plus second two-point run. By the way, Bilal Nichols on the Big Red Rage, he's going to give us a great – and you can go on the social media platforms and you can see it for yourself right now. Bilal Nichols gave us a great account of being on the other side of that, the wrong side of that, if you're a Raiders defensive lineman. But it was in the second half, and guess what? DJ Humphreys was 1-1 against Chandler Jones, his longtime training camp nemesis. They both made each other better all those years with the Cardinals. DJ got rolled up on. He was in a lot of pain. He came to the sideline. And Chandler Jones, as DJ was leaving the field, started pointing and barking at Kyler Murray as the Cardinals are getting ready to huddle. You better hope he comes back! Because, meaning, I got you now. Your franchise left tackle, DJ Humphreys, is out of the game. I'm coming to get you. And DJ got wind of that as he was leaving the field. And he came and all the trainers around him, he shook everyone off. He said, I'm going back in. I'm going back in. And he didn't let anybody really even examine him. He sat out his mandatory one play. he raced back out there and kept Kyler clean the rest of the game.
It's going to be weird not seeing number 74 line up left of center at left tackle for the Arizona Cardinals. So, again, wish nothing but the best for DJ. And, Paul, I think you caught me up on everything that I had missed. And I think the important thing right now is for you to take some time and get back home and make sure you take care of your other kid and
yeah.
make sure that the kid is properly trained and knows where to yeah. be and where not to be
yeah.
in Casa Calvici.
See, what I thought I was way past was Paulie potty training. I thought I was way past that, and now we've got a four-legged friend at home we have to worry about. Craig, my favorite part of free agency, thanks for asking, I want to make sure you are truly up to speed, was Luke Combs, country music superstar, bashing his Carolina Panthers when he tweeted out, "What are we doing? No first-round pick for Christian McCaffrey. No first-round pick now for Brian Burns. Are we just firebombing the whole team or what? Slow torture." End tweet, Luke Combs. I think I enjoyed that maybe more than anything during free agency period.
Well, Luke Combs might not know what the Panthers are doing. We do know what Paul will be doing, though, and that is potty training, a brand new okay. addition to his family.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And on that yeah. note, we'll put a lid on this edition of Cardinals Cover 2 presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. As always, special thanks to our executive producer, Jim Omohundro, our associate producer, Cody Fincher. For Paul Calvisi, I'm Craig Riolu. We'll talk to you next time here on Cardinals Cover 2.